everybody. This is Carol Murphy. You're listening to Heartstock Radio. And thank you for joining us. I'm just really grateful that we're here today and that you are too. Don't forget that we are live and you can call in just a little while and speak to our guest. Our call-in number is 406-491-1432. This interview that we're doing today is part of our Women in Business segment. And remember that we're on Twitter and Facebook. You can email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. Today, we have Elsie Mayo, and she's going to talk to us about the topic of integrating the feminine values into structures of companies and organizations. Last week, we had Karen Seva, and she talked a little bit about this, but we're going to go a little deeper with Elsie today. So sit back, enjoy the music, and we will be right back with Elsie.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Hi, folks, and this is Carol Murphy. Once again, you're listening to Heartstock Radio. And today we are here with Elsie Mayo. Elsie, please tell everybody who you are and what you do.
Thanks so much, Carol. My name is Elsie Mayo. That's M-A-I-O. That'll make a difference for if you're going to look me up afterward. I am the founder of Humanity, Inc., Incorporated, and the Soul Branding Institute. I'm a longtime advisor to global enterprises and social impact entrepreneurs alike. And I am a passionista for the social role of business.
I love that. Passionista. So we talked a little bit earlier, too, about a really big upcoming event in your life. You're going to be publishing a book. Tell our listeners just a little bit about that, too, before we get into our questions.
Thank you, Carol. Yes, the book is scheduled to be published at the end of October of 2017, this year. And it is about soul branding. It will have soul branding, S-O-U-L branding, in the title somewhere. My publisher and I are still debating the title exactly right now. But it is a big event for me because after being on Wall Street early in my career, and then at McKinsey and Company, and in various strategy consulting, corporate identity roles. Since 1997, we have been practicing this process called soul branding with clients who are looking to integrate the well-being of people, their employees, their stakeholders, and the world in their business. So having done that since 1997, published a lot, spoken a lot, we are finally publishing it, and that's because the time is right.
Yes, I agree with that, and we'll get a little bit more into that timing issue as we progress through some of our questions here. But to start out with, let's do a little bit of defining for our listeners. What does it mean to integrate the feminine into an organization?
When we talk about the feminine, we're not talking about women. We're talking about the feminine principle of community, of collaboration, of caring, of cooperation. And this is, you know, we use the word feminine at risk. We don't always use it because we don't want to polarize anybody. It's not male, female, feminine, masculine. But there are certain behaviors that are associated with that kind of communal and community orientation. What it looks like in terms of integrating it in a corporation, in a company, in a business, in one's life, it's really a matter of turning up the juice on those aspects of our human selves. We all in us have an impulse to contribute, to be part of community, to empower others. And in business, for some reason or other, that's really been discouraged in many ways. You know, think about the business of business is business. Think of that adage. And that was promoted by a very prominent economist. And that's how business really kind of was brought up. So the notion of anything beyond the bottom line, financial bottom line, was considered somewhat extraneous, possibly frivolous, until we got to the point where we are, actually even before where we are now, but once we all started to experience the interdependence of our economies, country to country, region to region, the interdependence and the blurred lines between competition and partners, this whole notion of me and you or us and them in business started to be a liability. The notion that the employee was to be put into a category and told what to do, command and control ways of running a business, just didn't work anymore, because now what's needed is for everyone to engage with what we call the complex, rich, inclusive systems, where we're all creating new value with each other. You see that on the internet all the time. Customers are informing the process of product development. And so the lines between us that sorted us, that compartmentalized people in their functions, really are blurred now. And the second aspect is that the whole self is what's being called forth in business. We need employees to be turned on about what they're doing, because we need them to innovate and to, when they're real time with customers, to deliver added value and co-create. So the time is right, I said earlier, because it's time for us all to be human at our best and passionate in everything that we do, including our business. So that's what we mean by the feminine values. We also refer to them as soul values. And I'll read some of them to you so that you'll see what we're talking about. And these are in publications that I published recently in the Marketing Journal, marketingjournal.org. Values like integrity, care, honesty, compassion, courage, the golden rule, and the broader good. Now, who does not count those as part of their higher angels? And when we think about what we want to pass on to our children, are they not included in that group? And those are the values now also that will determine superior performance in business.
I just love this. And one of the things that comes to my mind as we delve into this deeper is the recent Google manifesto, which really seemed more anti-soul values, if I may say so. Why is it so important that we not be living by that manifesto that unfortunately came out recently, to probably the chagrin of Google today, now, after the fact? Why is it so important that we develop a different, a soul manifesto, if you will?
Thanks. It's a very good question, and I'm going to sidestep it.
That's okay.
But use it as an example. It's a great example. I'm not going to address that specific situation because I don't really know it that well. Mm-hmm. But let's use the model and apply it, the model, to that situation. You know, that might have happened in your company.
Right.
What do you do? The fundamental assumption here is that we are at choice. Every human being has a choice. What wolf are we going to feed? You know, there's this Native American proverb, I guess you'd call it, about a grandfather telling a grandchild the story about where, essentially, he said, in us, there's a good wolf and a bad wolf. You know, and we all know this. We have higher impulses and lower impulses. And yes, we do judge them higher and lower as they suit our community's well-being, as they suit our personal preferences. So we're a choice, and I think we all get to ask ourselves, what wolf do we want to feed? And it just turns out that, generally speaking, now, feeding what's known as the, you know, the higher values, social values, feminine values, soul values, wolf, is produces, it's just better outcomes for businesses, and it's people are happier and more fulfilled. The dilemma, and that's always been true, but the dilemma has been, we thought we couldn't be that in business. We thought we had to, you know, suffer in business, or we had to be shrewd in business, or we had to be covert in business, you know. The truth is that we don't. That, in fact, it's a liability now, because everything is so transparent. And because creating value requires us to collaborate passionately. I don't know if that answered your question, but...
Yes, it does. It definitely does. And this is, it brings me to another point that I find fascinating. It's a little counterintuitive, because our inclination is to think that if we focus on the bottom line, profits, that we will be more profitable. But over the long term, it's actually not the case. If we focus on benefit and values over the long term, a company is actually more profitable. So I see a dynamic shift happening, and it really is tied to these principles that we're talking about today, which is refreshing and fun. So what kind of pushback are you getting from businesses that you work with?
I'll tell you that in a second. I just want to respond to what you said, but I forgot what that was. All right. The kind of pushback that we're getting.
The point that I made earlier was profit. You know, if we focus on the bottom line, our inclination is to think that's how we make more money, is to focus on the bottom line. But actually, a much broader perspective, a broader approach over the long term, maybe not, you know, quarter to quarter or month to month, but over the long term, has been proven to be more profitable.
Yeah, the long-term view. Here's the thing. I don't feel qualified to say that unequivocally. But what I can say is that I love business. I love business because it gets things done. And, you know, even in design thinking, which is now, you know, finally mainstreaming, which is a way of approaching problems and opportunities with constraint. The thing is that the best solutions come out of a solution generation model with constraint. Like, you know, okay, we're going to put a man on the moon. Holy mackerel, we have a lot of constraints. It's going to draw on our ingenuity, our, you know, out of the box think. It's going to draw on everything that we've got. So this whole idea of business and profit as a constraint is not a bad thing, you know, the requirements of profitability. So I don't poo-poo profit requirements. I like that. I like that about business. It's like being accountable for, you know, for results. The thing is that it has been the objective rather than a mechanism. And, you know, let's go back to when business started. So, you know, two folks got together and said, okay, I'll bake the bread, you make the butter, and then, you know, we'll figure out how we're going to swap it. You know, businesses started to support life, to support the web of life. And I think we just lost sight of that. So I just want to go on record as I like a lot about business. I like the constraints of it. It's just that we put the wrong design objective on it. It should be to further the well-being of the web of the life. Okay, now, pushback. You still want me to address that one?
We're just about at the point where we're going to open up the lines to some callers.
Okay.
So we're going to take a quick music break, and I'd like to remind everyone, the call-in number 406-491-1432. Quick music break, and we'll be right back and pick up where we're leaving off. This is Carol Murphy, and you're listening to Heartstock Radio. We're speaking with Elsie Mayo, and we're going to open up our phone lines if anybody would like to call in. It's 406-491-1432. So, Elsie, back to the point that we were getting to here, what kind of resistance do you find in business to integrating these feminine or soul principles into a company structure?
Thank you, Carol. You know, I guess the pushback is, the way I characterize the pushback is that there's an uneven adoption curve. And that is to say, you know, there are some companies who are just going to be leaders or who have some kind of a very strong incentive to change, to transform, that will be early adopters. And then, you know, I'm reminded of this quote by a novelist, William Gibson. He said, the future's already here. It's just not very evenly distributed. You know, so there's an adoption curve. But It is the leaders, you know, or those who just can't keep doing what they're doing that are more open to it. you know, the companies who, for example, are growing very, very quickly and who recognize that they can grow by acquisition, by acquiring other other enterprises or startups, etc. But it's not going to work unless there's a harmonious culture. And not only a harmonious culture, but one that is truly generative, truly turned on and passionate about what they're doing. Employees who feel like this job is a fulfillment of me at my best, you know, not just money. You know that, I mean, there's plenty of data about millennials and really the people who are considered at the top of the talent pool, whatever that means, you know, who give a preference to working for a company that is aligned with the greater good. Profitable, yes. In innovative, yes. But also aligned with the greater good and with these soul values. So the leaders are the ones that that get it, that want to grow, that are interested in leading in the new paradigm. And the others will make do.
Can you think of any examples of companies who are operating at this high of a level?
Well, you know, there's degree of high, mm-hmm. and so I'll give you a range. One that that stands out now, it's kind of a celebrity company in this regard, is Unilever, at least in one aspect of it. It's Unilever in particularly the corporate brand through the persona of its CEO, Paul Polman. It is what we characterize as a brand activist. It's an activist brand, which is to say, that term is something that Phil Kotler, who's known as the father of modern marketing, has been talking about recently, and he talked about in his current book, which is his autobiography, the activist brand, the brand activist. These are the companies who see that the new way of being is not command and control, but it is literally to be empowering of and collaborative, to be caring as a member of the whole system. And the whole system here is not just their suppliers, their employees, their regulators and their investors, but the web of life. There's just no way to separate the impact of a company from every aspect of life on Earth, especially the large ones. So that's the new paradigm. It is the company that stands for the broader good, the interests of the broader good, while it is being thriving itself as a company. And Unilever is an example of that.
So embracing the concept of oneness, or what I like to say is we're all in this together. And
we're all, yeah.
Yeah. So I think mm-hmm. about Zappos and Holacracy. It's a very mm-hmm. different power structure. It's distributive as opposed to what we think of in a traditional sense, top-down management. So
yes.
Any other examples that come to mind of companies that are kind of
superstars?
Yeah, there
are. Well, there's one that's, you know, I'm interested in the ones that are really fundamentally transforming in new ways at the edge. And certainly Zappos is a great example of that. One that we're interested in right now is Eileen Fisher. Eileen Fisher Company has a almost low profile, but, you know, it's one of those high-end women's fashion brands that is a real outlier and always has been. And what we like about them is their authenticity. You know, it's tempting for a company to be attracted to this whole idea and say, well, we're going to pick the environment as the way in which we contribute to the web of life. And then they forget about their employees and being empowering of employees and caring. You know, there's a lot of that has happened in the last 20 years under the label of sustainability. Companies kind of pick the flavor of caring, quote unquote, or the realm or the impact of caring, and then quite are not congruent in applying that value to everything they do. So I just wanted to pause for a moment and tell the listeners that the game here is go deep and find the values that are where your higher angels light up, and then be congruent in everything that you do.
Apply that so, across the board.
Yeah. In terms of all of your stakeholders and all of your behaviors. And don't get seduced by, you know, the trend, whether it's sustainability or social impact. Those, I think one of the illustrations and the learnings of our political cycle here is that rhetoric can lead to absolute lack of meaning. Rhetoric, i.e., you know, the labels that we put on things, can mean anything. So, especially now, it's important to go into the values that literally resonate in your body. If you are want to undertake this kind of transformation that we're talking about, you know, you'll know they're real when they light you up, and you will feel it in your body. That's one of the first steps that we take our clients through.
That's beautiful.
To find what authentically moves them.
So we've got about 2 minutes left, and I was wondering, Elsie, if you could share with us maybe some segments of your upcoming book.
Oh, I'm excited to, yeah. So the book really is in, it's pretty much in three parts, and it's about, it is a call to action. And frankly, it's a call to action to transform in a way that we think women have a very special role to play in this. Because those very impulses, as we were talking about before, to collaborate and to care and nurture and empower are something that women have had permission to do more than men. And so now it's time for women to get courage and to take those impulses out of the home, out of the personal relationships, and literally bring them in to the workplace, to the people that you work with and for. So the book is in three parts. It talks about living those values in your life, in your workplace, and in the world. And there are exercises and case illustrations of companies and organizations who have done that and how they've done that.
So we've got about a minute left. Go for it.
This is, and the other thing I'll emphasize is that for those who are skeptics, do it the other way around. Start with the business reason for doing it. Start with the economics, the economic value of values. Be skeptical and take a look at this entire approach, and you will see that there is an economic justification for doing what we're talking about. So you could start there if you're not starting from the impulse of your heart.
Thank you so
and
much.
And if you'd like to, is this the time for me to give people information about how to contact me?
Yes. How can folks contact you, Elsie?
The best way to contact me is through email. My email is Elsie, E-L-S as in Sam, I-E, at soulbranding, S-O-U-L, B as in boy, R-A-N-D-I-N-G.com.
Thanks for listening, everyone. This is Carol Murphy. You're listening to Heartstock. And thanks, Elsie. It's been fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much, Carol. Thanks for giving a platform to this amazing work that you're doing.
Peace.